Some say this is the one set in a futuristic Top Gear studio.
With exploding space cars.
A Vauxhall Nova.
And exciting new hydrogen fuel filtration converters.
All we know is it's called Max Warp.
Here we...
Shut up, O'Reilly! Power!
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tarmada Walk, Dalek, Spacetime, and Glam Rock.
Styler phones are awful, that's a TARDIS way. We're at Spunk and Merryskin.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook.
Even those that are lovely good. We'll review them all you see, so join us on this odyssey.
It's Who Back When.
Who back when?
Welcome to episode A008 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm JD, and joining me tonight is Pumpkin.
Hello. How are you doing, JD?
I'm fine. Tonight we're going to do Max Warp by Jonathan Morris.
Yes, we are.
And thank goodness for that.
Spoiler alert, people. We recorded our review of Dead London, and this review, we're recording them back to back, and I am wiped after the Dead London review. I am so looking forward to this one.
Because there is nothing like coming off a really poor episode with a really good one.
Yep.
So let's move on to our bite-sized chunk of Who, which hopefully by now we'll have a jingle.
Yeah.
And as normal, until you get a jingle, I am going to subject you to more singing. It's my motivation to you. You don't have to listen to me if you hurry up and get a jingle. Inside this podcast with Ponks and John, they want to tell you all of Who Back When. And in this bite-sized chunk, they'll tell you all Who Back When is here with Max Warp. Right, now,
that
hurry up.
That brought a tear to my eye.
Now, what you have to do is hurry up and please get this jingle, because I'm running out of musicals quite quickly.
Okie dokie. Bite-sized chunk of Who.
The Doctor and Lucy arrive at the futuristic equivalent of a car show, where the latest in spaceship design and tech is being reported by the hit TV show Max Warp.
Among other ships is the Kith Sunstorm, which is to be test piloted by Timbo the Ferret.
Alas, Timbo crashes the ship, and this story turns into a high-octane Doctor Who done it.
Nice. B-Scow done. Take it away, dude.
Welcome to the Max Warp studio, where TV presenter Jeffrey Vantage is broadcasting from the Inter-G Cruiser Show. And today, Timbo the Ferret will be test driving the Kith Sunstorm, the latest cruiser.
How do I follow up on that? That is exactly what the TV show Max Warp sounds like. Jeffrey Vantage, by the way, all over my quote-unquote notes, turns up as Clarkson.
You can, and for this review...
We will be referring to him.
It is Clarkson. O'Reilly is James May, and Timbo the Ferret is Richard the Hamster Hammond. It is brilliantly done like this. It is a spoof of Top Gear.
If you're unfamiliar with Top Gear, go onto YouTube right now.
Because you will find it everywhere.
Yeah. And you are, correct me if I'm wrong, quite a connoisseur of Top Gear, are you not, JD?
For someone that doesn't drive, I absolutely adore Top Gear. So this episode was made for me. So anyway, Vantage, O'Reilly, they're talking about their TV show. They will have Deborah D. Garfield Lemper on, who will be their celebrity in a budget-conscious spaceship. Now, Jeffrey Vantage is played by Graham Garden. Okay. Graham Garden, who was one of the goodies, he's a British institution from the 1970s. He hasn't yet starred in Doctor Who, and okay, hopefully one day he will. But, and this is a rather massive, massive but.
That's what she said.
He will reappear in The Big Finish in the audiobook, the Eighth Doctor audiobook, The Book of Kells.
Ooh.
And we will be visiting that one very, very much in detail. It is a very important one of the EDAs, and he plays a very important piece of Doctor Who lore.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
O'Reilly, otherwise known as James May, is being played by a guy called James Fleet. He is doing an absolutely spot-on, perfect James May impression. But on TV, he has been in practically every BBC period drama, but his main role was as Hugo in The Vicar of Dibley. And he also has not been in Doctor Who.
That's a damn shame. I have no idea who these people are, by the way. Sorry, just revealing my ignorance. I also don't think I've ever watched an episode of Top Gear. I should have mentioned that after we finished this recording, because now you're going to leave the studio, are you not? Anyway.
The TARDIS arrives.
Yes.
And the Doc and Lucy pop out, and Lucy is pissed off, as she always is when stepping out of the TARDIS, because she does not want to go to a car show.
No, but the Doctor does. The Doctor is so much into techie, beautiful spaceships with sleek designs, as you are into Top Gear.
Yes, well, you've just got to look at the neutrino converters on that.
What he said, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, the Doctor, he's talking about these spaceships like he is the biggest fan in the world, and I love this. I don't understand a word he's saying. Obviously, it's all technobabble, but I guess it can somehow be converted or sort of translated into car lingo. I know nothing about cars. I can admire their design. I know nothing about them, but I love this bit. And I love the fact that Lucy essentially accuses him of having a midlife crisis.
Ooh, Hyperion boosters!
Very good, very good impression. Lucy looks around and she sees a TV screen where we get to see a little bit of Max Warp. And Mr. Clarkson himself, Jeffrey Vantage, is saying that Timbo the Ferret is just about to test drive the new Sunstorm, which is a spaceship of Kith design, Kith being an alien race in this case.
So Jeffrey Vantage calls up Timbo the Ferret, and Timbo gives a review of this ship. There's a bit of static to begin with on the communications. He's getting really strong G-forces, despite the inertial dampeners being switched right onto full. So he's going...
It looks like a brick and steers like a shopping trolley.
It's definitely not one for the ladies popping out for a shampoo and set. Bear in mind...
there is so much chauvinist, sexist crap in this episode. It is wonderful.
Timbo, at this point... is being played by Duncan James.
Ooh.
Now we've had bad experiences before with singers on this show.
Oh no, wait, who is Duncan James?
Well, the last time we had a singer was Stephen Gately in Stylophones Are Awful.
Yeah.
But Duncan James isn't an actor, he's actually a singer from the band Blue.
Another boy band guy?
Yep.
Alright, okay.
Timbo reports that he's having some difficulty controlling the ship.
Yeah.
And the Doc and Lucy are watching this. The Doc technobabbles through the reasons why this is bad. Basically, he drives right into, it was a moon.
Yeah.
I think. And Lucy is a bit unhappy because this is the first time she's ever seen someone crash a spaceship into a moon live on television. The Doctor just says, right, this wasn't an accident. And we go straight into Miss Marple.
Yeah, this is very clearly a whodunit, and there are so many little references to various detective shows. Sherlock Holmes, Poirot, Marple. What else? I'm trying to think of something else. I'm sure there's something else as well.
They were the three that I picked up as well.
And also, sort of the very obvious reference, even though it's not a specific reference, is that it's almost like they split up the story into acts, where it's like interviewing the suspects and reviewing the evidence and going undercover, spoiler alert. So this is a whodunit.
So on board the station, the security officer, Judd Gilbride, meets the Doctor and Lucy, and the Doctor produces probably psychic paper or some sort of NLPs her, and giving them platinum rank clearance to do what they want.
Yeah.
So, which gets all of the sort of wishy-washy bit about them not allowed to be here out of the way very quickly.
Yeah, this is a fun scene, by the way. Because Lucy doesn't catch on at first, and just like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you saying that we are? And the Doctor excuses her by saying, well, we've had to wipe her memory clear for security reasons. And when she goes, no, you know you didn't. He goes, yeah, there you see, she doesn't remember any of it.
And Gilbride says that, you know, they're here during a presidential visit. It's probably not a coincidence. And the Doctor completely house of cards her by saying, yes, well, you might think that, but I couldn't possibly comment. And he says, right, I'm here investigating the murder. Timber was murdered. I'm here to investigate it. And security officer Judd Gilbride is played by, altogether now, Catriona Olsen.
Oh, Wow.
Who, at this point, must have blackmail material on the people of Big Finish, as she really is in every bloody episode so far. But she never gets boring, and she's doing a Scottish accent in this one. And,
yeah, you can totally tell that it's her, though.
Yeah, but she's doing it well.
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. No, sorry. I didn't mean that to come out as criticism. You can tell that it's her, and the moment you can tell that it's her, you are thrilled to bits.
Because, you know, it's like she turns up in an episode and instantly she elevates it.
Yeah.
And which is great. Good to have someone of that level doing this. Because whereas some of the guest cast have been okay, some of them have been absolutely brilliant. Katriana Olsen, as the headhunter or any of the other parts that she's played, does seem to do the best no matter what material she's given.
True.
Meanwhile.
Yeah, we cut to a broadcast. We now get to see a little bit of Max Warp. Clarkson, by which I mean Jeffrey Vantage, is expressing his sympathies with Timbo's nearest and dearest, saying that at least he died doing what he loved the most, sitting behind the wheel of an incredibly sexy spaceship. And he has, I think, a hilarious line. He says, "It's as though someone had hacked off his arm with a rusty chainsaw, because not only is it that painful, it is that inconvenient." It's a fantastic line.
And we get our first Kith.
Yeah.
The Kith ambassador basically extends his sympathy to the co-genitors of the deceased. So basically the parents.
Yeah.
On behalf of the Kith oligarchy. And basically Jeffrey and the Kith have an argument over the fact that the reason why Timbo is dead is due to the fact that the Kith spaceship is a load of shit.
Yeah, according to Vantage.
Yes, and yeah, the ambassador, on the other hand, turns around and goes, "Well, you know, our ships never break down, so therefore it was sabotaged."
Yeah.
The Kith ambassador is played by Nick Brimble.
Who's that, JD?
Nick Brimble hasn't been done Doctor Who before, this week, but he will return in the aforementioned The Book of Kells. Ooh. Alongside Graham Garden.
Oh, nice.
He's done a lot of TV shows. He tends to appear as sort of actor of the week on The Bill and Emmerdale and Silent Witness, but his biggest role so far has been as Corda in House of Cards, the original.
Oh, okay. So now we get a little scene with President Varlon. Now, I have a question for you. Varlon is not necessarily just the name of the president. It is the name of the species, right? Because I'm sort of torn between thinking these are humans and these are Varlons that are practically humanoid, except the president just happens to also be called Varlon.
I think it is President of Varlon, but she's called President. President Varlon.
Oh, right, okay.
Because it does seem to be that the war was between the Varlons and the Kith.
I was going
to
say, yeah, there's a later reference about that. But yeah, anyway, so she's been watching this on the TV, just turns it off, is super angry, and then she's joined by her spin droid.
Yeah,
this is a lovely invention, by the way.
Yeah, the Peter Mandel droid comes in and explains that he's a new model because the last one was stopped working. So he's much better.
Yeah.
And, you know, he spins off some numbers that 61% of the public believe that the death was
due to the Kith.
And, you know, her approval ratings are down a few points.
Yeah, and in fact even suggests a course of action. The spin droid very clearly says, statistically, you ought now essentially declare war against the Kith, because that would up your ratings with the voters.
But she doesn't want to do that, because she doesn't want to throw away a political career. So she totally doesn't Tony Blair it. And then Judge Gilbride appears with the TARDIS team.
Yeah.
President Varlon.
Oh, here we go.
I have nothing on.
She's
played by someone called Samantha Hughes. And that is the limit to what I know. Samantha Hughes apparently hasn't done anything. So this is the only thing ever. I couldn't find any research. I researched. I couldn't find anything.
Okay.
That was a bit of a letdown, but that's the only thing.
No, that's totally fine. Anyway, so the Doctor and the President, they have a little chat. And from this chat, what we learn is what we've actually already said, more or less. The Varlons and the Kith, they had a massive war that ended about 20 years ago. There was a peace treaty, but tensions are still kind of high. There are still a lot of people on both sides who disagree with the peace, or with the peace treaty. They also have a little chat about the spin droid. The Doctor is pretty impressed by spin droids in general. What else do we learn? Oh, we learn that the show itself, this car show, this space car show, is another symbolic effort to, I guess, display a potential for cooperation and peace.
Yeah, and the Doctor and Lucy say, right, it's investigating time. So stage one will be the gathering of the evidence.
Yeah, so this is exactly, this is what I was saying before. Everything is divided into these stages. Stage one, gathering of evidence. And this is pretty fun because this is where Lucy now more or less accuses everyone of being the killer.
Suspect number one, Gilbride.
And why is that?
Well, because she could have broken into the ship. She could have stolen the brakes. That's what I've got for her.
Yeah, pretty much. But the Doctor says, hey, listen, she pretty much just does everything that her spin droid tells her to do. So, suspect number two...
It might be the president.
Oh, really? I was going to say, suspect number two, the spin droid.
No, suspect number two was the president.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so then suspect number three, the spin droid. Sorry.
Suspect number four... anyway, at this point, Lucy's just... Just Lucy's going crazy at this point.
Sorry, I got my names mixed up there. But yeah, she names everyone as a prime suspect. And the Doctor basically goes, I don't think you've understood this whole evidence business, Lucy. So then they start going through the evidence. And the evidence in this case consists of an audio recording, if I'm not mistaken, of the communication between Timbo in the spaceship and the Max Warp studio.
Oh, hold on, Ponkin.
Oh, yeah. JD, tell me.
Well, Jeffrey Vantage called Timbo the ferret.
And yes, he did.
Maybe the word "the ferret" could be some sort of computer virus that causes ships to crash.
Yeah. And you know what? For a moment there, I thought that maybe she was right. I didn't want it to be because that's a kind of a dumb idea. But I thought maybe she was right because just as the Doctor sort of strips down the noise in the background, and just as the word ferret comes up, Lucy starts to wobble a little bit. It transpires, however, that they are being gassed. Someone is basically sedating them. Cut to them waking up.
And they appear to be in the cockpit of an Epsilon Nova 90. And the Doctor's quite excited because he knows what the spaceship is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're on a collision course for a moon. Allah, the death of Timbo.
Yeah, so we've sort of seen this before. Nothing can stop this spaceship. The controls are not responding. There are no evacuation chutes or anything like that. There's no rescue pod. And then they crash.
Ferret, mole, otter, beaver.
Yeah, Lucy starts saying, she starts just naming various rodents, hoping that somehow this will stop in case ferret was a code word.
An utterly, utterly brilliant scene from Sheridan Smith.
Sheridan Smith tangent. This show is hers. She is amazing in this episode.
Oh, she is absolutely brilliant. And, you know, last episode, Dead London, was the Doc and Lucy being separated for practically the entire episode, and when they got together, the plot was so dull that she didn't say anything.
Yeah.
This episode is the Doctor and Lucy together for basically the entire episode.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is so much better when they are together, because they are just bouncing off each other.
Not just that, when she is with Clarkson, those two bounce against each other very well as well. Because he's this crazy sexist, and she's a Primark shopping, slightly renegade girl who doesn't take very kindly to his mannerisms. And we get some fantastic banter between those two.
Unfortunately, the Doctor and Lucy are now dead because they've crashed into the moon.
Or so we were led to believe, but it turns out they were in fact in a flight simulator.
You have unfortunately failed your driving test.
And now you have crashed, says the space simulator, the flight simulator. Lucy goes, "What is this someone's idea of like a prank? Is this just someone trying to scare them?" And the Doctor goes, "No, this is probably someone's idea of a clue. Time for stage two, I think, interviewing suspects."
The Doc and Lucy go to meet the ambassador to the Kith.
Yeah.
And basically go through the questions of where were you, you know, what were you doing at the time of the ferret's death? And, you know, the ambassador is quite a bit pissed off that he's being accused of murder. But the Doctor says quite rightly what the president said to him, which was, "I'm under orders to find you not guilty. So just point the finger at someone else and we can move on from here."
And he also, the Kith ambassador says that he lost a large part of his family in the wars, and he is very, very keen to just put that entire thing in the past. Just, let's move on, let's have peace, finally.
Yeah, and, the Kith ambassador does seem to be, quite on the level about this. And
should mention, the Kith are essentially sponges. They are they are like plant beings. He even says at some point, if you'll excuse me, I need to go into my next spore cycle. I don't know if he says this now or if he says that later, but all of the verbiage of the Kith is somehow spore or otherwise plant related.
Which is a nice set of background, because they don't give up on that. It is all through the episode.
Yeah. And it is also very difficult to find a plant that is this charming, guilty of anything.
Yeah.
So either it's a clear good guy, or it's that tension of, wait, hang on, are we just relating to this creature so much deliberately so that we will not suspect it of anything? Very good. Either way, go for it.
The Doctor and Lucy go and speak to Gilbride.
Yeah.
And she gives them another info dump.
Yeah.
The scanners that are around the prototype ship say no one went near it, and it can detect, all sorts of radiation. It can detect body heat. It would be impossible even for a spin droid to tamper with it.
Because it would detect electricity.
So it was not sabotage.
No. Instead, what she thinks is that it was the Kith, that they intentionally created a faulty spaceship that was meant to crash into the moon, killing the ferret, so that another war would be instigated.
And we also learn at this point that the Varlans don't actually have a standing army or a standing space fleet, but the Kith do.
Yeah, they have a massive battle fleet.
Yeah. So basically, if there was a war, the Kith would win.
Yeah.
So the Doctor turns to Lucy and says, it's time for stage 3.
Going undercover.
We get a little cutscene before that, though.
Yeah, we do.
Of the Kith.
Mr. Kith, yeah.
Talking to his boss.
Yeah.
Basically, he's saying what we know, which is that the Varlans are blaming the Kith for the death of the ferret. The leader of the Kith says that the president's phoned her up and said, we don't blame you. We know it's nothing to do with you. And the Kith are basically matriarchal. They, it's more sort of like a monarchy rather than the Varlon's presidential style.
Yeah, this newfangled thing called democracy, I think it was. Either way, it's a rubbish idea.
And so they put the battle fleet on alert.
Yeah.
Because they don't trust the Varlans.
Exactly. Which means that the Kith ambassador, definitely innocent. But the Kith president, potential suspect.
Welcome to the latest edition of Max Warp, where we take a look at the Magellan Danube 4000, a manned spaceship, not for shandy drinkers.
Yeah, it's literally fueled by testosterone.
Listen to the throb of the ellipse converters. And it says to the ladies, bring the toothbrush and a spare pair of knickers.
I know nothing about cars, but I have got a raging sonic boner at this point. This is so good. Is this exactly like Top Gear? This is exactly like Top Gear, right?
This is Top Gear. This is really Top Gear.
Yeah.
Even to the point where O'Reilly is talking about, all the technical bits of the spaceships, which is exactly what James May does on Top Gear. O'Reilly and Vantage have the same sort of banter that May and Clarkson have, where Clarkson really does tell May to shut up all the time, and Vantage says, shut up, O'Reilly! And anyway, we would like to present to you our guest presenter.
Yeah, Lucy Miller, and she is here to introduce the Freefall Sunstriker, which has the same engine as the Moonstalk, but at a fraction of the cost.
Oh, God, no.
Oh,
no.
Who wants to listen to that? No. Clarkson stops her point blank. Listen, it doesn't sound as good when there's a chick behind the voice, basically.
The argument, the feminist argument, is stopped by James May, who says that they have sent Lucy Vauxhall Nova
great name.
To present the show, to broaden the base appeal of the show.
Yeah. There's another great line here. Fantastic line. I don't know if you want to soundbite it. Shall we soundbite it? It's the Vantage one.
I'd be happy to soundbite most of his lines in this episode. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
The last thing we need is to broaden our appeal, particularly with a female of the weaker gender.
Great line. Great line.
They have more banter, and it ends up with basically Vantage saying that, well, we can't have a woman on the program. We'll be talking about the latest Shields, and all she'll be wanting to talk about is her emotional problems. And then before you know it, the show will be all about shoes. It's dripping with sarcasm. It's really well done.
Yeah. But we do sort of learn, well, we go on to the next scene here, same cast, and we learn a few things. So Lucy is now part of the show because the head honchos, the producers of the show, have sent in a memo saying we need her on board. And what we learn is the exact same thing happened with the Ferris. I don't know if I'm speeding now, by the way, but the same thing happened with the Ferris. And while no one knew who he wasn't charismatic or whatever, he was still like an okay guy, and he knew everything there was to know about spaceships.
And then Vantage gives you the three rules of Top Gear. Rule one, which is incredibly sexist,
which
is because you're a woman, you can't drive anything. You know, you'll be checking the lipsticks in the mirror, and the next you've reversed into an asteroid belt.
Yeah,
rule number two is you can't put a ship on the cool wall because it has a nice color. And rule number three is I get the last word. It is my show, and I'm not going to be upstaged by a girl.
So they have another take. They try it again, but it, again, just does not work. In fact, Vantage even says, no, we are not recording this. It does not work because this girl does not look pretty and dumb enough.
Power!
Kablamo.
Meanwhile.
Yeah, cut to President Varlon and the Doctor. They're talking. Varlon basically goes, well, have you found out who killed the Ferret yet? And he says, well, it's not really that easy. I can't just sort of point and accuse. I need to go through all of the evidence. And he looks around, realizes there's no spin droid around. And to him, this is very strange. To me, this is a little bit ham-fisted. But he says, well, why is the spin droid not here? I was expecting that spin droid to be by your side at all times, especially now that there's, you know, tension brewing between the races. What we learn from this is that the spin droid is nowhere to be found. Presumably it's being recharged or it's somewhere off recharging. There's no response from it. There's no sign of it. There's no clue as to where it is. And the Doctor deduces and tells Varlon, I think there's about to be another murder.
Over in the pub, James May and Clarkson are, you know, having a little chat with Lucy Miller. And James May basically says, well, Clarkson actually does like you because normally he's a lot more patronizing. And considering what we've heard so far, God help them if that's the case. Lucy goes on and asks about whether they were a little suspicious about Timbo joining the show, you know, out of the blue.
Oh, shit. And this is when I came in. I'm sorry. I went off notes there for a moment when I sped ahead.
It's fine. And basically, you know, no one wants to kill Timbo. He's nice guy. You know, he's a ferret. And most of the death threats are actually for Vantage.
Yeah, and they come from feminists.
And practically everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
And in fact, the list, you know, of animal welfare activists, and probably because of his leather jeans, environmental campaigners because of the petrol everywhere, are basically the people that want to kill Clarkson.
Sure.
And then we get the info dump around how Clarkson got into the TV show, and he was actually a test pilot during the Kith-Varlon War.
Yeah, and probably not just a test pilot, he was also a weapons developer. He was also a weapons tester.
And basically Jeffrey says, well, if the war had lasted a few more weeks, they would have had victory, but instead they're having to give lots and lots of money to the Kith.
Yeah.
He doesn't want coexistence with the Kith. But Lucy does get out of him that he doesn't actually want the war to start up again because, you know, he's seen death. He's seen, you know, all of his friends die. He doesn't want the war to start up again.
Yeah. Anyway, so this conversation is cut short, though, because eventually Vantage, a.k.a. Clarkson, he's going to split off from the group. And his parting words are basically to Lucy. Listen, O'Reilly's like maybe half a minute away from trying to hit on you by talking about catalytic filtration systems. He leaves, O'Reilly turns up, and he says something like, listen, Lucy, I want your opinion on something, and promise me to be honest. Where do you stand on catalytic filtration systems? And that's how we cut to the next scene.
So the Doctor is starting to look for the spin droid.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Lucy is undercover, so he's actually doing the bulk of the actual detective work.
Yeah.
And he finds Security Officer Gilbride. Gilbride says that this is not the first time that the spin droid has gone missing. So basically they come across a dead spin droid, a dead disassembled spin droid.
Yeah, just bits of metal all over the place.
Meanwhile, after that cutscene,
yeah,
Lucy and James May are in an elevator. She tries to let him down nicely. She tries to let him down not nicely.
He does not give up. He absolutely positively thinks that there is a chance in hell that he will be able to dive into her pants that night. Oh, fantastic. Anyway, yeah, go for it.
Thankfully, at this point, someone tries to kill the Kith ambassador.
Yeah, who is in an adjacent room. His hotel room is just, I guess, on the same floor.
James May runs in the opposite direction.
Yep.
And Lucy Miller, as she always does, runs towards the gunshot.
I'm sure James May really appreciated that portrayal of him, by the way.
It's probably fair and reasonable.
Or like a horny man completely spared of any semblance of courage.
James May, if you're listening to this podcast, A, we're sorry for the portrayal of you in it. B, we understand. And C...
And C, we didn't write this, so... And D, I've actually never really seen your show. I've seen bits of it, so please don't be offended.
I have. Feel free to be offended, but send me tickets to Top Gear. Lucy arrives at the Kith ambassador assassination party.
Yeah.
And points out that someone tried to assassinate him, but failed.
Yeah, the Kith even shows, as evidence of this, there is a scorch mark on the wall. Someone has fired a laser blast in his general direction. He was just about to enter his spore cycle, but they narrowly missed him, and then just escaped, I guess. There's no sign of a killer.
Yeah, and there's no security camera footage either.
Yeah. So then Doctor and Gilbride appear.
And
Gilbride says, we've got a full security lockdown. No one goes in or out, I believe.
And he says that he now knows what the murderer is going to do next.
Oh.
So the Doctor totally has figured this out at some point. But the Doctor and Lucy then leave, and she says, ah, Doc, I thought I heard the President's spin droid in the Kith ambassador's room.
Mm.
But the Doc has obviously come back from having just found it completely dead and disassembled.
Yeah, that's true. And he also brings up another point. The Kith ambassador said that the Kith, are phosphorescent. So that when the lights are turned off, they start glowing in the dark. And there is no way anyone could possibly miss, basically. They are a lit-up target.
And so, basically, the Doc and Lucy head down to the TV studio because they figured out that was a fake assassination, and therefore there is a real one about to happen. The President now talks to the Kith, and basically the ambassador is terrified. You know, he thinks someone is trying to kill him, and it is perfectly reasonable. So he's about to leave the station, and he phones up his boss and says that the Varlons are basically trying to kill him, and he's leaving, and can they send the entire battle fleet to come and kill them all?
Yeah. So then we have a little scene with Lucy and the Doc, and the Doctor asks her, well, did you notice anything? Like, is anything strange here when you were going undercover? And she goes, well, O'Reilly smells really bad, and Jeffrey wears a lot of foundation. But that doesn't necessarily qualify as suspicious behavior. But then he realizes,
oh my god, they've put the Umbriel Starstream in the unfunky section of the cool wall.
and he actually moves the Umbriel slipstream to the funky board. Because even whilst solving an intergalactic murder mystery, there is time for this kind of correction.
And then the Doctor and Lucy are attacked.
Yeah, well, they're just about to look at some video security footage, but then, yeah, laser blasts happen, like, just everywhere, left, right, and centre, there's laser, and they just run off.
Well, the Doctor tells Lucy to run off.
Oh, sorry.
So Lucy does, which is quite strange for Lucy, but and the Doctor stays in the studio.
Right.
So Lucy heads over to go and find some help for the Doctor, so, you know, find Security Officer Gilbride. She finds Gilbride and the President together, and explains that, you know, someone's trying to kill the Doctor. But the President says, well, yeah, we'd like to help, but unfortunately, there's 1,000 ships heading towards us, and we're all going to die. Then they see the Kith Ambassador spaceship leaving, and they see that it's actually ejecting its warp core and other Star Trek-isms, and they lose contact with the ambassador, and the ship blows up.
Right. So, kablamo, Lucy heads back to the studio, calls out for the Doctor, but instead bumps into O'Reilly. A bit suspicious that he should be there, but he explains, oh, he couldn't sleep because he didn't get laid, and now he just is back at the office doing some work, getting some of the paperwork done, and then, all of a sudden, another alarm sounds. This is another battle alert. Ipso facto, it's wartime.
So, the President is telephoned up by the Matriarch of the Kith, and says that due to the very recent death of the ambassador, they're about to go and kill everyone on board the station. He gives them 5 minutes to make, you know, peace with their god. Lucy turns up. There are thousands and thousands of spaceships.
No sign of the Doctor.
And basically, it is no hope. They're all going to die. And then, as if by magic,
kablamo,
the Doctor appears.
Yeah, and he immediately calls the Kith. He immediately calls the Kith and goes, please, 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 just power down your entire fleet, because if you do not, a computer virus that has somehow been implanted within your systems is going to just kill all of you. The Kith do not take this seriously.
Until the Kith technicians turn around and go that their entire computer system is being rewritten.
Yeah, so they have no choice. They power down.
President Varlon sees that there are now the entire Kith battle fleet is completely and utterly defenseless.
Yeah.
So the Doctor basically gives her a choice. You can either wipe out that entire race that have been at war with you before. Your people want them all dead. It will increase your approval rating. You will win this election. You will probably win the next election, probably the election after that, or you can help them. And she makes the decision to send help.
Yeah. So then the question remains. Lucy asks the Doctor, A, where have you been? But B, and please, foremost, how did you know about all this? How did you figure this out? And he goes in classic detective series style, like Poirot style, I'll reveal all once we've gathered all of the suspects. So, we get the standard Poirot ending. The Doctor is in a room with President Varlon, Gilbride, Clarkson, and O'Reilly.
So, he is obviously standing in the middle of the room, surrounded by these people, pottering back and forth, a la Poirot.
Yeah, waxing his mustache.
Lucy standing next to him like some sort of female Watson from the ABC television show Elementary, played by Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
And he says that this virus was brilliant.
Yeah.
But it had never been tested, so it needed a guinea pig. Or a guinea ferret.
Bingo. So, while Lucy obviously had reached the conclusion that Timbo the ferret was innocent, he was, after all, the very first victim, the Doctor counters that and says, oh, no, 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 no. He was not innocent, but there was more to him than met the eye. In fact, he was an undercover agent for the Kith, and he was sent there only to investigate, well, the suspicion that someone on the Max Warp show may be acting against them.
someone who had feelings about the Kith, someone who had access to the new computer virus technology developed during the last war.
In fact,
someone called Clarkson. And you can see him turn and point at Jeffrey Vantage.
Yeah, and Vantage just laughs and goes, there is no way you can prove that. That is ridiculous. But there is even more to this than met the eye as well. Clarkson did not just decide to test his super virus on the ferret. The ferret was cleverer than that. In fact,
the doctor basically turns around and says that they're here for a completely different reason, because this is a murder mystery where no murder has taken place.
Yeah.
So basically, Timbo realized that Jeffrey was onto him.
Yeah. And since he was working for the Kith and he was there to test pilot a Kith spaceship, clearly he would have no problem whatsoever guiding this spaceship by remote, such as from the cockpit of a spaceship simulator, such as the one that they found themselves in post-gas just a half an hour ago.
So James May is now wondering what the hell happened to Timbo. And the doctor explains that the Timbo Scooby-Dooed himself in the form of the President Spin Droid.
Which is a really weird twist, dude. Such a weird twist. But it turns out that is exactly what happened. The Spin Droid is there.
Who removes its plastic head to reveal the ferret. So now, Jeffrey basically pulls out a gun and basically holds them all hostage. You know, I would have gotten away with this if it hadn't been for you pesky time travelers.
Yeah.
He takes President Varlon hostage.
Yeah, and whilst doing so and slowly backing out of the room, he reveals his inner feelings, his innermost feelings about Max Warp, saying that, oh my god, I will finally no longer need to host a show that is aimed at pathetic middle-aged men. Sorry, guys.
So they're now heading towards his getaway spaceship.
And by the way, JD, I'm just quoting the show.
I know. I'm not middle-aged till next year. They're backing away now to the getaway spaceship until, as if by magic, the also-dead Kith ambassador turns up and shoots the gun out of Clarkson's hand.
Awesome.
Because now, basically, the doctor reveals that he basically Scooby-Dooed the Kith ambassador into the flight simulator as well, so no one was on board the Kith ship when it blew up.
Pretty awesome.
And Lucy turns around and goes, well, this is worse than Poirot, this.
Exactly. By the way, we have skipped so many references. There is an elementary My Dear Watson or something, elementary My Dear Lucy reference earlier on.
Yeah.
She even says, like, oh, well, Sherlocked.
Yeah, and, you know, so Jeffrey starts to rave about the Kith. He's taken away, and that's the last we see of Clarkson.
Yeah, pretty much. So now, cut to another episode of the Max Warp Show.
Well, this week, we'll be looking at the new hydrogen fuel feed filtration converters and comparing different types of luggage racks. And we'll be exploring the history of the humble traffic bollard.
So Lucy, having narrowly escaped the not-so-efficient flirtatious advances of O'Reilly, doesn't exactly have full confidence in him carrying on the show. But the doctor goes, you know what, I think maybe this improves matters, because now this is going to be a spaceship show actually about spaceships.
Meanwhile, the president turns around and basically reiterates that the Kith is committed to peace, and they're making monetary incentives towards the Varlon Empire. And as a result, all forms of income tax are now abolished.
Yeah, and the doctor ham-fists a little bit of social criticism into the ending by going, it is pretty amazing how good and how efficient politicians are when they're not surrounded by spin droids.
So Lucy says, well, you know, I've rather enjoyed it here. You know, it's great being around all these big, powerful spaceships with their boosters and their converters. But, you know, I prefer the TARDIS. And that's it.
And that's it.
Know,
yeah.
They head off.
End of Max Warp. This is a fun one.
Okay, I think it's my turn to
it is.
Go first.
Go for it.
I adored this episode, as if it wasn't obvious. it's not a serious episode. It's not human resources, blood of the Daleks level of peril. It's just Lucy Miller and her companion having entertaining fun, solving mysteries in time and space. You know, Graham Garden playing Jeremy Clarkson, it was just as good as if they'd have got Jeremy Clarkson to play Jeremy Clarkson. The background, the spaceship car show is amazing. The sound in the background, the Tannoy announcements are going on. You know, the guest cast are really good. You know, you have Katarina Olsen, who can read the telephone directory and we'd listen to it.
Yep.
Graham Garden, who did brilliantly and as you know, will be back as a reoccurring character later on, and thank goodness for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you know, you've got Agatha Christie, Top Gear, Sherlock. It's a fun, enjoyable episode. And I would, you know, it's when we talked about No More Lies, we said how much we would have loved to have seen it on television.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of quality of it, the garden party and the Vortasaurs and the Tarmadoc. I would like to see this one on television for a very similar reason. You can imagine what the car show is like. You can imagine what the spaceship is like. So overall, it's not plot heavy. It's not, one of these which is overly serious. It's not, you know, it doesn't have big villains, but who cares? It is an enjoyable, really well crafted episode. 4.4 out of 5.
Wow. Nice. Okay. Very good. You've given this one just a smidgen more than I was about to give it. I'm giving this 4.1. I think it's hilarious. I think it's nice. It's good. It's got fantastic pacing. It's got some great characters. And it's got, most of all, amazing, amazing banter. The dialogue in this episode is much better than, well, in, I guess, the last few episodes. Human Resources had a few very, very good scenes. But here, we actually get to see the characters interact with others. And we get more of the Doctor. We get more of Lucy, and Lucy is just tremendous. We said this in the very beginning of this review. She just reflects everything off as Clarkson and the Doctor. They just have this fantastic mind game, or this fantastic verbal game, and it is just through and through very entertaining. I'm marking this down just a tiny little bit, because it is not a serious episode. If you know what I mean, this is a comedy episode, and I don't know if I can give a comedy episode a super high mark, but as comedy episodes go, this one is top of the line, so 4.1. Plus, it kind of made me want to watch shows like Top Gear just for a little moment there. Luckily, I came to my senses, but still, so much fun.
You know, one of the things I didn't mention at the start is the writer of this episode, Jonathan Morris, has done a lot of the audiobooks.
Okay.
And this is the first of the Eighth Doctor adventures that he's done.
Okay.
But there are four more that he has written coming up. Yes. Hot House, The Cannibalists, and then the two-parter, which is Deimos and The Resurrection of Mars.
Ooh.
So we have, you know, some more of Jonathan Morris to come, and some of those are very good episodes.
Oh, very good. What's the next one, though?
The next one is Brave New Town.
Ooh. Okay. You haven't listened to it yet. I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't listened to it yet, no. So this one will be new and interesting. So
yeah.
I have nothing that I can say about it.
Except that you look forward to it, as do I.
Except that I'm looking forward to it. And I dare say that there's going to be some more amazing guest cast. So.
Yeah, no doubt. So yeah, listen to that one. Speaking of segues, you should follow JD on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane, that's Kane with a K. And I am at Punkin. You know how to spell that. Like us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/whobackwhen. Check out the visual index on whobackwhen.com. Subscribe, rate, and please do review us on iTunes. We would love it. So until next time, shamalama ding dong. Be right and excellent to each other, people.
Goodbye.
Rock on. Ciao, ciao.
Whobackwhen.